Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 1:43, and that is Pacific Summer Time, and today is June 7th. And today was a day of records, particularly in the bond markets, where German bunds went to a new all-time low of 4.5 basis points over zero. And that's a picture in contrast with the short end of the curve, which has been in negative territory for a fair amount of time at this stage. But it also serves to highlight just how much downward pressure there is on yields. And then you look at treasuries or look at gilts in the UK, and there are very few countries right now in the G7 where you're getting a positive return in the bond market if you were to hold on a yield to maturity basis. And realistically, in a rising interest rate environment, that would be the only way to value bonds, but of course that is not how bonds are being valued right now. It's more on a momentum trade and really riding on the coattails of central banks, and particularly the Bank of Japan and the ECB, where they're literally buying anything that anyone decides to issue. And of course, with the one of the issues that the ECB runs into is that the corporate bond market and the collateralized bond market isn't as mature within the Eurozone as it is in the USA. So their ability to buy the bonds is greatly inhibited by the fact that there are very few bonds that they can buy. So they keep lowering the collateral hurdle what they're willing to accept, because they have to try and create a market. Well, it's a green light for anyone who wants to set up a securitization desk at any bank in Europe, because they have a ready buyer. But with negative interest rates, then what they're trying to do is to kickstart the demand for credit, so that what they're really trying to do is to set up issuance. And by issuance, then they're hoping that the banking sector will start issuing more bonds so that they can be securitized, and therefore the ECB will be able to buy them. At least that would appear to be their strategy, regardless of the fact that it's inherently deflationary to charge people to take their money when you're asking them to, or at least to pay people, probably the better way to say it is to pay people to take your money. Then that is the issue that they face. But this is an environment where Europe in particular is pulling out the stops, and they're willing to do whatever it takes in order to try and get growth going. And the Eurozone economy is growing. It is no longer contracting. And unemployment has come down from the eye-watering levels that it was at a few years ago. So today in Europe, the majority of indices were in positive territory, and the majority up in excess of 1%. Now, it's not all cut and dry just yet. They still need to get back above their respective trend means. This has been a reasonably orderly consolidation, for example, on the Eurostox 50. But it really does need to break the short-term progression of lower rally highs and to get back above the 200-day moving average to really break what has been a more than year-long downtrend. But if it can do that, then the potential for Europe to play catch-up and to outperform Wall Street would be gain considerable credence. At the same time, the majority of the Wall Street indices are brushing their peaks. The S&P 500 moved to a new 11-month high in here today. It hasn't been this high since July of last year, but it was only up 2 at the close. Perhaps, and it's hardly surprising that we get a little bit of buyer fatigue within less than 30 points of the all-time high. The Dow Jones is only 300 points away from its all-time high and is continuing to range here below the 18,000 level, and the Nasdaq is looking a little bit tired here, but and that is now testing the progression of lower rally highs. And the clear outperformer was the Russell 2000, which was up in robust fashion in here today and continues to unwind what was a deep oversold condition, and that is no doubt being helped along by the oil price, which pushed through $50 in here today and closed above it on Brent crude and indeed on West Texas Intermediate. So Brent crude is above $51 right now. And then when you look at the continuous commodity index, it's really on a tear in here, where you have a number of the soft commodities also performing really very favorably. So sugar and has done very well and remains in a fairly consistent uptrend, albeit a little bit overbought in the short term. Coffee is back at the upper side of its range, but has first step above the base formation characteristics overall. Orange juice has been surging higher, and the grains and beans have been really quite firm as well. So when you take that in tandem with the energy complex and the fairly impressive rally that we've already had in natural gas, then that's certainly helping to push the unweighted continuous commodity index, or old CRB, higher in here. And the precious metals were quite interesting in here today, because, and I'm just going to take one as an example, silver. Silver today was as low as 1624, but finished out the day at 1641. And that was down just a couple of cents on the day. So all of them, gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, have got tails on these candles. And considering that we had those big upper dynamics on Friday and a relative pause in here yesterday, there was a little bit of selling pressure early on in here today, but it was reversed, which helps to confound the bears and then to increase the confidence that a low of at least near-term significance has been reached, and potentially medium-term significance, and not least because a number of those metals are finding support in the region of their respective trend means, having unwound their really quite impressive short-term overbought conditions from earlier on in the year. So there is potential here that this could be a comparatively shallow pullback, and that we could see additional upside over the next few weeks. And part of the reason that the precious metals were able to bounce back in here today was the weakness of the dollar, and not really against the euro, for example, where it was reasonably unchanged, but against commodity currencies, where the Australian dollar has tacked on almost an additional full cent and is up to 74 cents. The Canadian dollar was stronger by about 0.75 cents, and it's now at about 127 and a half, having been in excess of 130 just last week. And the Norwegian crown, the Russian ruble, are also strengthening in here. And then when you start to look around at the Asian region, and the ASEAN region more particularly, then the renminbi bounced from its lows last week, and hasn't really followed through on that, and it's hard to make a very bullish case for the renminbi. But what it has done has turned attention back onto ASEAN currencies, where you've seen that the Indonesian rupiah, the Korean won, the Singapore dollar, the ringgit, Philippine peso, and even the and obviously India is not an ASEAN nation, but the Indian rupee has also strengthened up in here. And considering that those respective currencies had, particularly the Indonesian rupiah and the Indian rupee, had been so very weak over the last few years, that they have really garnered considerable competitiveness relative to their regional neighbors. So, and particularly for Indonesia, where the central bank has been intervening to support the currency since last October, and you have a new government in the Philippines, which has so far at least decided that they are going to continue with policy continuity in terms of the economy, which has always been a challenge for emerging markets. So that's a very positive outcome for the Philippines. And if they really can bring down the corruption and crime statistics, well, that would also be a net positive. So what we're seeing is that foreign investors are beginning to look once more at the ASEAN region, and not least because those respective currencies do look like they have not just found support in the short term, but potentially in the medium term. And if that's the case, then that's a green light for foreign investors, where they can get the currency appreciation and the capital market appreciation, and potentially even a pickup in yield. Then That's something that they were unable to achieve last year because the dollar had been so firm against those currencies. But then we do really have to, and this is a point we've been making in the subscribers audio for quite some time, is that we need to differentiate between the dollar's performance against commodity currencies, between emerging market currencies and against developed market currencies, because it is incorrect to simply say the dollar. You can't value any currency unless you're valuing it against something else. And its performance against those three baskets of currencies is really quite different. And of course, the one I haven't talked about yet is the yen. And the yen was relatively unchanged in here. The euro was relatively unchanged here today. But the pound was stronger by a cent. So it's not difficult to predict volatility, but this is really very volatile. And there is a lot of disagreement going on right now as to exactly where the pound should be trading. And we can anticipate that to continue until we get an outcome from this referendum. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.